Shus Rabbonim, Rabbi Olshin, Rabbi Kunstler. It's always impressive just to see people on, you know, this time of year trying to get a little pumped up for what we're going into. And, you know, there are two things that are necessary right now. I was once in, I was going to England. And at customs in England, you know, they complain, they have you fill out a card, a landing card. Certain countries do that. So I had to fill out a landing card. I got to a space that says occupation, which is always challenging to figure out what I do. So I just wrote teacher. Then I get to, okay, I throw it out. I didn't write rabbi, I didn't write Jew. I just wrote nationality, I went to a Jewish. And the guy customs, I forgot where he says, listen, Jewish is not a nationality, you know. I wrote Jewish, but this time I wrote, I am. And then this time I wrote teacher for occupation, I wrote teachers. I get the customs, and the guy at the border control is a big Hindu. He's about 6'4", long black beard, and a tichel. And I get up there with my card, and I walk up to this guy. And right from the get-go, the guy didn't like me. I could tell the guy didn't like me. He gave me this look. It kind of appeared. So he takes a look at my card, and he says to me, "What do you teach?" And I didn't like his attitude. He said, "What do you teach?" I said, "Torah." So he kind of flinched for a second, because he had no idea what that was. And then he looked at my ticket. Now, because I'm a Kohen, so there were issues with traveling, so I went to England, and then on the way back, I was routed through Germany, so I shouldn't have a problem with bodies on the plane coming back to Israel. And he looks at my thing, he says, "Why are you traveling through Germany?" You know, Germany was a haven for terrorists. So I said to him, "Well, because there's a problem with Tumas Meis. Some poskim are Mekel, some are Machmir. You could be Mekel on a Posech Tefach, but I'm Machmir, so I'm going through Germany." Then we looked at each other, probably the most delicious 5 seconds of my life. And he was staring at me, and I was just looking at him. And you could tell, he didn't know what I was talking about. I knew that he didn't know what I was talking about. And he knew that I knew that he didn't know what he was talking about. And he's looking at me and I'm staring at him. This is the epic meeting of the God worshiper versus the cow worshiper. And, we're just staring deep into each other's souls. And then again, he looks at me and he goes, "What do you teach?" I said, "Torah." So he stamps my thing and says, "Okay, you can go in." Unbelievable Musser lesson. Here's a guy who suspected me of being a terrorist, obviously, because I look like one. And he's supposed to be protecting his country, and he can't admit that he doesn't know. I mean, any other nurse are going to say, "Well, what's a Posech Tefach?" Right? Well, let me explain to you all of Maseches Taharas. Right? I understand that, but at least he should have asked. So at certain times in life, a person has something interfering with his honesty. And this is a time of year where a person has to be extremely honest with themselves. Time of the year where a person, we're coming forward to Ribono Shel Olam, we're clapping on like that. And we have all these things that we're doing and we're talking about, we're trying to do tshuva and really, really get our act together. So a person sometimes has to be honest. And one of the most difficult things in life is to look in the mirror and say, "Wow, you know, I have these flaws." Chazal say that a person sees everybody else's flaws, a person doesn't see his own flaws. You gave me a pen and paper, I could write down all the flaws. I could sit there, I'd run out of ink, writing the flaws of the people around me. If I ever think of any of my own flaws, I think 7 years ago I might have benched too fast. That's about the best I could do for myself. Everything else, I'm basically ha'adam ha'mushlam. That's how we think of ourselves. And therefore it is the time of year a person has to be coldly honest with himself and focus a little bit what areas need improvement, number one. Number two, there was an interesting halachic shaila. A woman, there's a Judaica store, and a woman comes in with her baby, and she says to the lady behind the counter, "I want to buy a golden menorah. Let me see the best golden menorah you have in the store." The lady goes top shelf. She pulls out a beautiful golden menorah. Gorgeous gold. I have. Thank you very much. And thank you, appreciate it. Well, Yom Kippur's coming, you know, you got to drink. You know, that's everybody has their minhag before Yom Kippur. I know you know where you are 10 minutes before Yom Kippur, right? 10 minutes before everybody's got their family skula. You take 3 cups of water, 7 cups of water, 613 cups of water, right? And inevitably, as soon as Yom Kippur, 10 minutes after Yom Kippur starts, what happens? Could be a dry one this year. Every notice is every year it's a dry one, right? So, which tells you about it's all up here because about an hour before you, you know, during the course of the day, I know what happens. And, you know, Kippur, you're fasting, you're looking at the clock. Sometimes you're into it. Sometimes you're like waiting. You know, how long does it take? I never understood people leafing through the machzor. That I never understood. At Rosh Hashanah, I can understand. You want to go home and eat. Yom Kippur, people are looking like this. I don't understand. When you get to the end of the book, that's when you go home, right? You're just saying the whole book. Then you can eat. So people are thinking, oh, you got an hour left to Yom Kippur, and you're trying to block out those thoughts. What am I going to break my fast on? You know, try to get focused. The minute Yom Kippur ends, people, you know, I could really fast tomorrow if I really wanted to. You know? No one ever does. No one ever does. You go over and you have four pieces of slices of pizza. You wedge them in, and you like a cobra swallowing a rodent. You know, but okay. After a full day of self-control, we'll talk about that in a second. So, this lady walks into a shop and she wants to buy this beautiful golden menorah. And she takes a look at this menorah and she's got a baby with her. She says to the lady, she takes down a beautiful $5,000 menorah. She says, listen, my husband's out in the car. Can you watch my baby for a second? Let me go ask him if he wants to spend that kind of money. She says, sure, no problem. She walks out. Wait, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. After about 10 minutes, a woman comes in screaming frantically, there's my baby, there's my baby. Where's my baby? Where's my baby? What turned out? That the lady on the street, she and her partner were con artists. She saw some lady in Geula who left her baby unattended while she, you know, right on the sidewalk. You could, you know, you see them once in a while. You could take a few home with you if you want. And she sees this baby on it, so she took the baby, walked in, and she said, here, watch my baby. How many people would suspect that this is a kidnapper and a con artist who's giving you the baby to watch? And she, you know, she absconded with the menorah. In the meantime, the owner of the shop comes back, and he says to this lady, the proprietor, you know, you owe me $5,000. You gave away a menorah. So they went to a Din Torah to find out whether or not the lady working in the store. And she tied it. Listen, I did exactly what the proprietor would have wanted me to do. He himself would have done the same thing. And the Rav Takapaska did, under the circumstances, she did exactly what nobody would suspect, that this was a kidnapping. But then he said something interesting. Who's the real guilty party in the story? The guilty party is the mother who took her focus off the baby. A mother, there's a Gzeir in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, says a woman is never allowed to have her child out of her sight. The mother took her focus off the baby. She's the guilty party here. So when you come to this time of the year, person has to get focused. And whatever we're doing in the course of the year, now is the time where it's all started with Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Ser Simei Tshuva. Now's the time we're heading for the time of the year where we're doing that. What are we trying to do? Part of the idea is, in the course of the year, the nature of Yiddishkeit is three steps forward and two steps back. You have good days, you have bad days, you have days where you're connecting, days of learning is going better, days of learning is a little struggling, been out on the chavera, been out on your relationships with people are a little better, a little, sometimes a little less patient with people, and so on and so forth. It's three steps forward, two steps back. And what ends up happening is that we get to Ne'ilah, and imagine, remember what you feel like at Ne'ilah, right at the point that we're saying Hashem Hu Elokim. So imagine a guy set the world record for the high jump. 8 feet, whatever the record is now. And this guy is the world record holder for the high jump. And he goes to the Olympics 20 years later. He's already retired. He goes to the Olympics and he's attending the high jump competition. And the public address announcer says, we have, ladies and gentlemen, we have in the stands the still current world record holder, Mr. Bill Murphy is here, who holds the world record for the high jump. He's sitting in the stands, he turns to his friend, he says, I'm the high jump world record. I can't even jump into bed now. How could I cleared 8 feet? His friend says to him, yeah. When you were focused and you had a goal and you were training and you're watching your nutrition and everything was all directed towards one end, then you were able to clear a bar at 8 feet. What we're doing on the Elah, on Yom Kippur, we're setting the bar at a certain height. That means we got to a certain point where you actually feel, we do feel. At that moment, we feel a certain connection which we never feel in the rest of the year. And at that moment, we've just set the bar at a certain level. And what happens is, in the course of the year, we're going to be going up, down, up, down, up, down. What's going to happen is, the next Elul, we always have that mark, that height, to focus on. If I'm really focused, that's where I could be. I could be over there. Because I know that I actually got there at Eli and Yom Kippur. In the course of the year, up, down, up, down, we go to the next Elul, Rosh Hashanah, the whole process begins again. And then we go to Ne'ilah next year and set the bar just that much higher. And then we go higher, lower, higher, lower. And the next deal, the process continues such that in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever amount of time it is, you'll actually get to, when you drop in the course of the year, your low point when you drop 20 years from now will be higher than your highest point right now. Because the nature of Yiddishkeit is three steps forward, two steps back. So a person goes into Yom Kippur now, and we're all focused, and there's something that needs to be worked on, just one example, but it's really a theme that applies to the entire Torah. There was an Avreich who was doing outreach in the south of Israel. And he was one of these all the way to the south near Gaza. And he was driving, and all of a sudden the siren went off, they were shooting missiles. So he quickly drove off the side of the road and to get to some sort of shelter, some sort of bomb shelter. And as he drove off the side of the road, he accidentally ran over a dog. And he goes into the shelter, and the siren, they sound the all clear. I made a bracha before. They sound the all clear. And he comes out, and the people who own the dog start accosting him. They start hollering at him and yelling at him, you killed the dog, you know, you harried him, you don't care about dogs. You know, they start giving a hard time. He said, listen, it was because nefesh, I had to run. They start giving a hard time. Guy starts apologizing. And the family then, you know, they talk. He says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. And they invite him up to the house. He goes up to the house with his family. They live in this huge mansion. And they kind of hit it off. Then he came back the next week, and eventually he was bekar of this family. And this family came from, and they said, we're so impressed with the outreach work that you're doing. We'd like to donate. They had a massive, massive room in their mansion. They said, we'd like to donate this room to make it a base medrash for your outreach efforts. We only have one condition. We want to name the base medrash after our dog. Right? And so he had to ask a shaila, are they allowed to call the base medrash Base Igor? The dog's name was Igor. They want to name the base medrash Base Igor. Right? So they went to a rav. And the Rav Paskin, based on the Gemara, that says there was one of the Tanoim was called Rabbi Yochanan ben Turta. It was Rabbi Yochanan who was named after an ox. He said, if you can name a Tanoi after an ox, you can name a Beis Medrash. So there is a Beis Medrash somewhere in the south of Israel. Those of you who are interested in Ben Hasmanim, you go look, send them my regards. There's a Beis Medrash there that's called Beis Igor, somewhere in Israel. Then there was a kid who asked the Rav that his dog died. He wanted to learn Mishnayos, Le'ilui Nishmas HaDog. Then he said no. So there's a Beis Medrash called Beis Igor. What's the Musar Haskel? Imagine if this Avreich would have lost it. Imagine he would have lost control. He would have gotten angry. He would have started yelling and hollering. So all the benefit that he would have gotten from the donation, what came later on, it would have all been lost. So Gemara says that David HaMelech had an older brother, Eliav. And when David HaMelech went out to the battlefront to go check on his brothers, he was sent by his father to check on his brothers. His brother, Eliav, got angry at him. His brother Eliav snapped at him. He said, wait, he came out here to see some action. That's why he came out to the battlefront. And he got angry at David HaMelech. David HaMelech said to him, what did I do? What are you getting so angry for? What, I just came out here? What did I do? And he got angry. Chazal say that as a result of his anger, because Eliav got angry at David HaMelech, Eliav was destined to be the Melech of Klal Yisrael. Eliav was meant to be the king. Today we'd be singing Eliav Melech Yisrael. But because he got angry at David HaMelech, he was taken, he lost the Malchus. And Chazal say that Kol Shekoy, somebody gets angry, Afilu Poskin Olav Gedula Min HaShemayim Morid Nosa. Somebody gets angry. Even if you were meant to rise to a position of prominence, but you got angry, you lost it, therefore, the gedula, the prominence, is taken away from you. So, if you stop and think about it, what's happening over here? The guy lost control. Because he lost control, he can't be the king. Now, it's not a punishment, by the way. It's not a punishment. If somebody wanted to do something in life, sometimes a person is not qualified. Let's say you want to be a skydiving instructor. Some people would like to do that. You want to be a skydiving instructor. There's only one problem. You're afraid of heights. So when you qualify for the job, on your job application, you write, well, I want to be a skydiving instructor, but I have two problems. Number one, I'm afraid of heights. Number two, in general, I'm a coward and a chicken. And they say, well, we're sorry, sir, we can't give you the job. Maybe you'll be the chess instructor, right? But we can't, you know, the skydiving instructor, you can't be. What have you got against me? Why are you punishing me? What's wrong? Why are you punishing me? I'm not punishing you. You're not qualified. You're not qualified. How could I can't, I'm not giving you because you're not qualified. A person who's not in control can't be a king. You know, nowadays they talk about the president, he has the football, that thing that will set off a nuclear war. It's, that doesn't work quite, it's not quite like that. But apparently he's got access to
let's put this, he's got more access than we do, right? So he, if he wants, he could set off the, so you got him, you got the guy in North Korea, what's his name, the guy with the haircut, looks like his head got stuck in a vacuum cleaner, what's his name, Kim Jong-jung or something, right? Okay, so you got these guys got their finger on the bomb. Very, very, you know, very, very soothing thought. So the President of the United States, you know, if you're going to make decisions for a country, a king has to be somebody who's in control. A king, a person who's making decisions for others, you can't be out of control. You've got too much. It's not that we're punishing you. If a person loses it, a person gets angry, he can't be a melech simply because a melech, by definition, the qualification for a melech is that you're in control. If you're out of control, you can't be a melech. So they had a Muslim in the United States. Muslim had some sort of TV show, I did, some sort of TV program, broadcast, and he wanted to break the stereotype of Muslims. The world has a stereotype of Muslims. Somebody once said, not all Muslims, most Muslims are not terrorists. Right? So the United States Center said, yeah, but most terrorists are Muslims. So the Muslims have, they get some bad press. And not that they don't deserve it, but they get some bad press. So this guy decided he wanted to shatter the stereotype of Muslims. So he had a TV show to show what nice people Muslims are. And then one day his wife disappeared, and it turned out that he beheaded her because he was upset about something. Right? So there went his what do you call it? Which I don't know if he shattered the stereotype or only confirmed the stereotype, I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, he beheaded her because he got upset. I don't know, lunch wasn't ready, something, so he beheaded her. So a person understands that if you lose it, you've lost your qualifications. You're not a king, not because we're punishing you. You're not a king simply because you are not qualified. So if you take a look at the Torah, start to finish, somebody would ask you, what is the Torah about? What is the entire Torah, start to finish? What is Torah about? What's contained in Torah? The answer is that the entire Torah, yeah, it's about munah and this mitzvah, that mitzvah, other mitzvahs. There's one theme that runs through the Torah start to finish, and it's called self-control. We have to control what we eat, what we think about, what we look at, our ego, our selfishness. Start to finish, when you take a look at the Torah is all about self-control. That's what you're going to find. Every area, touch it where you will. And the Torah, it doesn't say we should deprive ourselves, and it doesn't say we have to live. In our day and age, people, Balei Tshuvas, who are looking in on Yiddishkeit, they're not deprived, and they know they're not deprived. What is demanded of us? Food, nowadays, kosher food? Do you know that there are over 300,000 products in the world that have kosher supervision? And some of them are actually kosher. Do you know that? There were 300,000 products that have kosher supervision. And there are, what's so difficult? Shabbos, keeping Shabbos? Keeping Shabbos is not difficult. Shabbos, what do you do on Shabbos? You eat and you sleep, right? A human being's dream, right? You can eat, sleep. Okay, so you got to go to shul a little bit. And even there, you could get to the Kiddush club. So what? Shabbos is so difficult. And nowadays, to keep Shabbos, if you get fired from your job from keeping Shabbos, you're on easy street. You've made it for life. You can sue the guy's pants off. So it's not that difficult. We have to control ourselves. There is no pleasure in life that we are being deprived of. But the entire Torah, start to finish, is a theme of self-control. That's why you have, sometimes, you have people keep, I know the dread fear of mankind is one of those three-day yontif combinations. Two-day yontif with a Shabbos, like a three-dayer. Like, my goodness, how are we going to get through this? Like, it's almost tsar balei chayim. Right? What? Oh, another meal? Right? You go, oh, we got to eat again? Then on Motzei Yontif, what do? You go out to a restaurant to eat, right? After complaining for 3 days about eating. You know, what would you like? I mean, what were you expecting to do? You get to eat and sleep. What could be better? So we're not deprived in any way, sure, except that we have to control ourselves. All the Torah demands is control yourself. We're not, you know, the Gemara says, I don't remember if we spoke about this last year or two, I don't remember what, in the Chet of Adam Rishon. So what did the Nachash want? Nachash talks to Chava. So everybody learned the story, the Nachash talks to Chava. Isn't there a question? Is there something bothering you? Is something bothering you about this story? Even little kids are afraid to ask it. Adults are afraid to ask it. All little kids wonder. There's one major question in the story where the Nachash, the whole confrontation, Nachash and Chava, which is? How can he talk? Snakes don't talk, right? That's the question everybody, oh, yeah, but that was then. You know, it needs an answer. Yeah, that was then. Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay, that's good enough. That satisfies you. Oh, and then things change. Rav Hirsch says, you know what that nachash represents? Chava takes a look at the fruit. Now, in the animal world, there's no such thing as self-control. If a lion sees a zebra and it looks good, smells good, and tastes good, the lion is going to chase down that zebra. There's never been in the history of mankind a lion that ever stopped himself and said, I really shouldn't do this, I'm out of control. I really shouldn't do this, I'm behaving like an animal. There's never been a lion who is put on the brakes because he felt it's morally wrong. There's never been a cougar chasing down a deer, and he says to himself, well, I better not, because then I'll be fleshix for 6 hours. You know, forget it. I don't want. Only Jews do that, by the way. Only we do. Only a Jew will forfeit a steak dinner with French fries because sometime in the next 6 hours, we want that much milk in our coffee. Right? Only a Jew will do that. I've had people say to me, oh, I don't want to become fleshix. Don't worry. It's not a conversion. You'll be okay. You don't become fleshix. You'll get out of it. You know, we'll welcome you back with open arms. In the animal kingdom, if it looks good, it smells good, and tastes good, you indulge. A human being, Chava, is told by God, no, you're not allowed to have it, but it looks good, smells good, and tastes good. Says Rav Hirsch, you know what that nachash is? That nachash is the animal inside every human being. There's an animal in every human being that's telling us, a Nike company has made billions on their slogan, which is what? Just do it. Right? The nachash is, and if with any imagination, humor me here, but with any imagination, that Nike swoosh looks a little bit like a snake. Picture it. So just look at the next guy's gym shoes. But whatever it is, just do it means no self-control. Don't think about consequences. It looks good. Indulge. That's what the nachash is saying to Chava. The entire theme of the Torah is the opposite. The entire theme of the Torah is that you have it available, there may be a pleasure available, but now you have to turn on the self-control. By the way, it's not limited to anger. A person, Reb David Pavarsky Zatzal, was the Rosh Yeshiva, one of the Rosh Yeshiva of Ponovich. Reb David Pavarsky broke his elbow or his arm, something like that, I don't remember what it was, and the doctor said to him that they have to put his arm in a sling. So he said he doesn't want to put his arm in a sling. The doctor said to him, yeah, but the arm has to be, you can't move your arm. So he says, I won't move my arm. The doctor says, no, all day long you can't move your arm. So he says, I won't move my arm. So the doctor said, yeah, but at night you can't move your arm either when you're sleeping. So he says, I won't move my arm when I'm sleeping. And he stopped and think about that. Imagine all day long you've got the self-control, the presence of mind to not move your arm. That means that a person can actually get to the point where they are in total control of all of their limbs. And not only they're in control of their limbs, they're in control of their limbs when they sleep. And we're talking about science fiction here. For most people, sleep is one of these activities that needs to be practiced and perfected. And when you get into bed, you know, it's kind of like, you're all over the place. There's a way to sleep. Like, you can sleep with self-control as well. I don't say you should do it yet. But there is a level where a person gets to where I'm in control. My mind, even my subconscious mind, is in total control. And therefore, a person understands the entire theme of the Torah, start to finish, the theme of the Torah is self-control. Rav Dessler had a Talmud, and they were walking, and as they were walking, they had to catch a train. And as they were walking at the train station, the train started pulling in. And as the train started pulling in, the Talmud broke into a trot. And as he broke into the trot, Rav Dessler grabbed him and said, don't run. That's behala. You're running out of just, it's without forethought. There'll be another train. Don't allow yourself, maintain your self-control. It doesn't mean once in a while. Sometimes, you know, the buses, you got to run for buses in Israel. That's part of the fun of living here, is running for the bus, especially when you see some lady who's dressed up going to a chasna in high-heeled shoes, running for the bus. You know, rag-gosh, all over the place. Yeah, no self-respect at all. So wait 15 minutes. It took you 4 hours to put yourself together, lady. You know, wait 15 minutes, you'll have another bus. That means you're out of control. That's what Rav Dessler was telling his Talmud. Don't get to a point. By the way, there's another shy that came up here in Eretz Yisrael. A father took his kids, Beinu Zvanim, he took his kids up north on a teal. So they were all the way up north in the north of the country, and Then they had to get back to Yerushalayim. They were away for, you know, most of the day. They get on the bus somewhere in the north, 2.5 hour ride to Yerushalayim. They get on the bus. The bus is packed. The bus is packed full of people. And now he's got 4 kvetchy kids with him, and he's in no great mood either. And now they got to stand 2.5 hours all the way to Yerushalayim. So the bus starts moving. Father, at a certain point, has a great idea. He takes his phone. He picks it up. He says real loud, "Yeah, well, the doctor said 2 of the kids have Mexican flu for sure, and 2 of the kids might have Mexican flu." And the bus stopped. The first stop, 10 minutes later, half the bus cleared off. Now they got seats galore. They can lie down. They're relaxed. They get to Yerushalayim. Wonderful. They get to Yerushalayim. You go to the road. Says, "So, Rav, you know, my libi nokfi, my conscience is bothering me. I think I might have been over on Geneva's Das." So the Rav says, "If you weren't over on Geneva's Das, you are an over on Gezel Gomor of the Rabbin. Because you forced those people off the bus. You knew they'd get off the bus. That was your entire plan. You would have gotten off the bus too if you heard somebody had kids with Mexican flu. They got off the bus. They all had to repurchase new tickets now to get on the next bus. Now you stole from the rabbin, which you can't possibly do tshuva for. You can do something for the tzibur. You can do it. You could build a shul, build a mikveh, build a school, buy the tzibur a bus. Whatever you do for the tzibur, you could do. That's not 100% rectification of what you've done. That doesn't rectify the error. It's the best you could do under the circumstances. What happened? One moment of loss of self-control. One moment he lost self-control. And in that one moment, he's now done an aver he's going to regret the rest of his life. In one moment, he's been Gozel the Rabbin. So when a person understands that, what is it that requires, what is self-control? Self-control means that I'm not dictated to by what's going on around me. I'm the one who makes the decisions. I control what happens around me. I'm in control of myself. When Yosef comes to Paro, Yosef becomes the viceroy of Egypt. So the Egyptians, they came fetching to Paro. They said to Paro, "Hey, you know, this Hebrew kid, you're making him the head of Mitzrayim." So Gemara Sota says, Paro said to the people, "Ginune Malchus ani roebo." I see that he's got royal tendencies. Ginune Malchus ani roebo. He's got royal tendencies. Royal tendencies means, plush and chat means that, you know, he's tall, he's nice looking, he looks royal, he behaves royal, knows when to bow. But the Mefarshim say, you know what Ginune Malchus means? Yosef was the ultimate melech over himself. Yosef was the one who had the self-control. Yosef was the one who walked away from the most difficult Nisayon. That Nisayon of Yosef at Tzadik, that's a Nisayon we go through every day. You go through it on the streets, you go through it with little boxes, you go through it, that Nisayon every day. Are you a melech or are you an Eved? So if a person we are Rosh Hashanah, Hashem, melech, Hashem, melech, Hashem, melech, 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 melech. But at the end of the day, if we want to be mamluch, you know, there's an expression, there's a saying that says, takes one to know one. Is the air not on, is it? Is the air conditioning on? If it is, it needs a... Huh? Wishy-washy, yes, very. There's a saying, it takes one to know one. Takes one to know one. Hashem melech, Hashem moloch, Hashem imloch. If we're recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a king, how do we recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a king? We have to demonstrate that we're kings ourselves. What is a real melech? A real melech is somebody who's molech on himself. Yosef, Ginune Malchus ani roebo. Paro wasn't just talking about physical Yosef. He was talking about Yosef's behavior. That Yosef is somebody who's molech on himself. That's somebody who can be molech on an entire nation. So, what's the takeaway from all this? We were mentioning the Akedah. Talk about the Akedah. The Akedah is the main theme of Rosh Hashanah and blowing shofar. And the Vilna Gaon even had a simonim that people have. The Vilna Gaon had a ram's head on his table. He dipped a ram's head in honey on Rosh Hashanah. Hey, we eat apples. That ram sounds pretty good, right? The ram's head. There's something about the Akedah. The Akedah is a central theme. So the basic idea is that obviously the Akedah is a schus for us. Obviously we speak about the Akedah as being a theme for Klal Yisrael. Stay with me, we're almost done. I just want to tell you one last thought. Maybe some of you have heard it, but it's a very, very important idea Rav Dessler points out. There's a medrash that says, when Avram Avinu went up to the Akedah, so he takes a knife, and he raises the knife to Yitzhak's neck. And at the last minute, the Malach says to him, don't shecht him. So the Medrash says, Avraham Avinu said to the Malach, should I strangle him instead? He said, no, don't strangle him. Should I make a cut? Draw some blood? No, don't make a cut. So what should I do? He says, there's a ram. So Avraham Avinu takes the ram and he shechts the ram. And every step of the way he says, let it be as if this was Yitzhak that's being shechted. Let it if it be Yitzhak that's being skinned, cut up, burnt on the mizbech. Pella dikim medrash. First of all, the Malach says to him, don't shecht him. Avraham Avinu says, should I strangle him? And what the Malach says, hey, great idea. We didn't think of that up here. Yeah, strangle him. Oh, what is that? Number one. Number two, every step, and then no, should I at least make a cut and draw blood? Wait, you got to use the knife? What? Then every step of the way after that, let it be as if this is Yitzhak. Let it be as if this is Yitzhak. There's only one problem. It's not Yitzhak, it's a ram. What do you mean, let it be as if it's Yitzhak? What's going on here? So Reb Dessler explains that, you know, have you ever been in a situation, when I went to college back in Princeton, No, I didn't go to Princeton. I just thought I'd mention it because I knew you'd be impressed. But no, I didn't go to Princeton. Princeton's the one I didn't go to. So when I was there, actually, no, University in Chicago. So when I was in college, I went into every single college course that I took. Every time I walked into a class, every single instructor, to a man or woman, began the same way. They all said, "My name is Mr. Peters. Your grade will be based on this, that, or the other." My name is Miss Smith, your grade will be based on this, that, or the other. So I understood right away, nobody's there for the education. Everybody's only there for the grade, which is true. Because you get good grades, you get good money. That's basically the pattern. So imagine what would happen if I go into a class and I have my final exam. And I study 3 days and three nights and drink Jolt, and you're all ready for the final exam. You go into the final exam, and you're all pumped up, and at the last minute, the instructor says, okay, guess what? No exam today. Everybody gets an automatic A. What would your knee-jerk reaction would be? There'd be a bit of a letdown. Hey, now that's not logical because the whole goal is to get the A. But there would be a letdown, wouldn't there? Anytime in life you've pumped yourself up, if you've ever been afraid to do something, like skydiving, bungee jumping, riding on roller coasters or something, and you actually got yourself to the point, especially when your friends are around, I've walked up roller coasters that every step was like walking to the electric chair. That I am not a roller coaster guy. Much better at checkers. And what do you call it? And so, you know, you're walking up, I'm going to do this because my friends are around and I can't stand that chicken, that constant hearing that. Okay, we're going. And every step of the way, I'm pushing myself to do something that I'm dreading. If I get to the top, and at the last minute the guy says, okay, ride's closed for the day, my knee-jerk reaction would be I'd be disappointed. Because I actually got myself to the point where I want to do something that I don't want to do. Avraham Avinu is walking for 3 days, facing the single most difficult test any human being in history has ever faced or ever will face. And it's a test that because he passed it, we are benefiting from the schus. For lack of a better term, Avraham Avinu has psyched himself up to do the Akedah. As he gets there, he realizes two things. Number one, this is the agony of having to shecht his son. On the other hand, he realizes if he fulfills the task, he will break through in his ruchnius to a level that was previously unattainable. So he takes the knife, and at the last minute, he's about to sheft. And the Malach says, don't do it. At that moment, Avraham Avinu understands he's got an energy inside of him, a physical, a ruchni energy, a potential energy. And if he doesn't do something with that energy, his madriga is going to drop. Rav Dessler says, whatever person has a hisorus, any sort of inspiration, you must translate that inspiration into an action. And if you don't, you're going to drop lower than you were before you got the inspiration. So Avraham Avinu says, he's almost desperate. Don't shecht him. Should I strangle him? No, don't strangle him. Should I at least make a cut? Don't make a cut. So what should I do? There's a ramp. And he takes that same physical energy, puts every step of the way. Let this be its Yitzhak. He put the same energy into the ramp that he would have put into shechting Yitzhak. I mean, maybe he achieves what he would have achieved. Senator Dessler, Get to this point of the year, we're all inspired. There's nobody in this room who's not inspired. Some more, some less, but we've all been moved, we've all been touched. This is the point of the year where we know we're playing for keeps. Mi yichya umi yamus. How can you say those words? We look at those words. Mi yichya umi yamus. There are a lot of people today, there are a lot of people around who are, they weren't around, they're not around now. They were around, but now they're not around. In the course of the year, they're gone. My son, one of my son's best friends, his father, did not wake up Rosh Hashanah morning. 47-year-old man. This Rosh Hashanah, 2 days ago. He didn't wake up. He was in a hotel, a mashgiach in a hotel. Rosh Hashanah morning, he didn't wake up. That's it. Finished. Mi yichya umi yamus. We're playing for keeps. So when we're playing for keeps, we're inspired. And we understand it's not that, oh, please Hashem, have mercy, God, we're doing it out of fear. That's only a way of helping us to get a little bit more focused. But we take the focus and the inspiration, then we have to take the inspiration and translate it into an action. When Yom Kippur finishes, it's very easy for people to say, whew, it's over, good. Don't have to do this for another 364 days. That's true, because we're human. And that's what we think. It's a good idea that when Yom Kippur finishes, sit down, open up a Gemara, and learn for 20 minutes. I dare you. Not if, eat something. But before you then engage in whatever activities you want to engage in, go back to the base register. Learn for 20 minutes. If you learn for a half hour, that's also mutter. There's no Isser Bal Tosif here. But do something. If you're inspired in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, so do something for somebody. But don't let these moments of inspiration go. If you let the moments of inspiration, so all the inspiration goes out the tube, down the tubes, there's nothing left. That's what Rav Dessler says. There's nothing left. It's got to be taken and translated into an action. And then you take the action with you into the next month and into the next year. Come back to Elul, set the bar higher next year, and it's an entire lifetime of growth.
Just to return your chairs. Thank you very much for the capital.